El Paso playwright Megan O'Toole Pitts is about to release No Mas, an original radio play which will be released on several platforms, including Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, or online at nomasep.com. Inspired by true events, the drama tells the story of Carmelita Torres and the 1917 Bath Riots. Here to tell us more about this project are Megan O'Toole Pitts and Celia Aguilar. Welcome to State of the Arts.
Hello, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So before we start these awesome conversations, I'd like to check in with everybody and just kind of ask, how are you doing? How's the pandemic treating you? How are you getting through it?
It's been kind of a roller coaster. It's been a blessing in a sense where you kind of have time to do all the things that you want to do that you normally wouldn't have to. But it's also been emotional in a lot of different ways. Just there's so much going on in the world, and also having all that time to just sit in all of your thoughts can be a lot for people. But other than that, it's been normal hermit mode.
What about you, Megan?
Hermit mode for sure. I didn't feel like any of us really had a summer, and I was actually terrified to realize that it, depending on your blood type, you're more or less susceptible to get COVID and to be on a ventilator due to it. I just found that out a few weeks ago. And so I do have some loved ones that are the blood type that are the highest likely to get the virus and to actually be on a ventilator fighting for their life because of it. So I didn't know that blood type was so important that way. So I'm like really fearful for my loved ones that have that blood type.
It's strange how like the more information or the less any kind of information, like anxiety levels either go really high, really low, really high, but it's like part of the roller coaster, I think, of this thing.
Yeah, it's almost like I wish I didn't learn it, but then at the same time, I know that it's a good thing that I know that because I'm extra cautious around those loved ones.
This whole thing also had an impact on your project, right? I imagine it was supposed to be on the stage and now it's on the radio.
Yeah, exactly. It was supposed to be on the stage and the pandemic hit. And at first it seemed like we were all waiting it out. When it first hit, it seemed like, oh, maybe we'll be good by summer. We'll have a vaccine by summer. But then when it looked like that was getting further and further out, MCAD contacted me and brainstormed with me about how to get the project done while also staying safe. And so I pitched them the idea of how about I do a radio play that I can somehow broadcast or stream online. And what if I have rehearsals over Zoom, every single rehearsal? And so they were really receptive to that idea. And that's the route that we took.
Have you ever done a radio play, or is this just part of the ingenuity of that COVID has made us all very creative?
Yeah, it's about learning on the fly sometimes. And I'm that kind of learner too. I learn by doing. It is new. It's new for a lot of us. A lot of us have not done the voice acting or done anything like this, a radio play. And the radio play is kind of an extinct or at least dying art form. And I think that's why, although we did it for COVID, it kind of really suited the time period because that was a form of getting stories out there during the time period that Carmelita Torres was alive.
I'm remiss to say, I feel like a terrible El Pasoan. I was not familiar with Carmelita Torres' story until you said, hey, I wrote this play. Can I talk about it with you? So will you shed some light on that? I mean, will you tell us about who Carmelita was and what the Bath Riots were that took place here?
Carmelita Torres was 17 years old. She was a housekeeper who would commute daily via the trolley over the Santa Fe International Bridge for work and then go back home in the evening. And she rioted on January 28, 1917. What she was protesting, and I actually refer to it as a protest more often, but in the books, it's known as the 1917 Bath Riots. But the reason she was protesting is that there were bathhouses there on the American side of the Santa Fe International Bridge that were being used to have all Mexicans crossing, men, women, and children. They bring them into those bathhouses, have them strip naked, delouse them with several chemical agents, that were dangerous, such as gasoline, kerosene. And then in the 1920s, they added to the mix Zyklon B, which we know is harmful to human beings as well. But I think it is an important distinction that the Zyklon B was not used to kill, but we know that it's harmful. So who knows what effects that had on the individuals exposed on the long term. It was never calculated. It was never studied. I don't think it was even kept track of who all had to go through this.
But why did it even need to happen? I mean, it was like you were cross-border traffic. Who decided that we have to have this here?
Yeah. So our mayor at the time was Mayor Tom Lee Jr., which is the father of the artist. Tom Lee Jr. had this intense paranoia that Mexicans crossing the bridge into El Paso were going to bring typhus and other disease. So he actually sent a telegram to Washington, D.C., actually asking for concentration camps here in El Paso, in which Mexicans would have to be there for 2 weeks before they were allowed to walk into El Paso. But even the federal government thought that was extreme, but they did give him funds to instead build bathhouses. Those bathhouses were used to, quote unquote, disinfect all Mexicans coming into El Paso. So he constructed those bathhouses with federal funds because of this paranoia and prejudice. In his telegram to Washington, D.C., he says, dirty, lousy, destitute Mexicans will bring disease to El Paso. So it's not just, oh, well, maybe his actions were a little prejudiced. No, it's in his own words, in his own writing.
Celia, you play Carmelita in this role, and we had talked before, and you said your family members have an experience with this.
Yeah, actually, when we were doing the play, I was like, let me ask my dad. I wonder if he ever experienced anything like that, or my mom, you know? And my father was a migrant worker, so he used to pick in the fields seasonally. And in the late 60s, he came over with the Bracero program. And a stipulation of his contract was that he had to go through this disinfection. So he told me how he described it is that he would get hosed down with some powder. Like they would strip naked and then get hosed down. And it's so crazy because he talks about it so casually, like, oh, that's just what they were doing para los piojos, you know, and they have no concept of how dangerous it could be. It's just so normalized, even, you know, what, like 50 years after the bath riots.
For your dad to have gone through it and to say, well, you know, it's just this thing I have to do so I can go to work.
Yeah, they don't even see things like that as hardships or anything like that. It's just what has to be done to survive. It's funny because I think about it and I'm like, well, who knows what kind of impact it had? Like my father has cancer and I'm like, does that even have anything to do with it? Or is it other factors? Like, I wonder, you know?
And in 1917, it took a little woman named Carmelita to say, I'm not having this anymore.
Yeah, she said no to the quarantine officers there that were ushering everybody into the bathhouses. And then 30 women on the trolley that she was on stood behind her and said, yeah, we're also not going to do this. We stand behind her decision. We don't want this to happen anymore. And then 30 became 200, and then 200 became thousands. So there was unrest on the bridge for two solid days, and it blocked traffic entirely, and no one came into Juarez, and nobody came into El Paso, because they wanted that much of a demonstration. That's how outraged they were.
And yet, when we were talking before, you said that this continued for a long time after this, right? I mean, definitely there was unrest. People didn't want to do it. It was known that nobody wanted to go through this. And yet it continued well after 1917.
Yeah, it did, unfortunately. It continued for 20 years afterwards, specifically on the Santa Fe International Bridge, but on the U.S.-Mexican border in several other places like Hidalgo, Texas. It continued into the 50s and the 60s, like Celia was just saying right now. Her story is so monumental, her father's story. And even though he doesn't realize it should be written down in books, because from my research, I had only seen into the 50s. I had seen a photo from 1956. And then Celia enlightened us, the cast and the crew, about what her father had said he went through in the 60s. So it went on for so long. And it wasn't documented. Nobody wrote this down. That's why the story of Carmelita Torres is so important because it was the one thing that was documented a lot, like the Los Angeles Times reported it, New York Times reported it. It was national news, this protest that she led.
So Celia, what's it like to be the star of this play and to play Carmelita?
It was super inspiring. Like, I was really glad that I could be a part of this project because I had heard about Carmelita Torres before, and I was really grateful that Megan was telling this story and doing something with it. And I just felt like I could really embody the spirit of Carmelita Torres. Like, I think I stole the No Mas for this statement that I was writing for another group that I'm a part of, that we led a demonstration to get people together and talk about what's going on with the detained children here, you know, and there's just so much that's still going on, these same injustices with different faces, you know? Yeah. And it's so different because we had Zoom rehearsals. I had never done that. I wish we could have all recorded together, but of course, to be safe, we were kind of separate and we had to interact with each other, but we didn't have that whole energy of everything that was happening. You know, we had to cut it into pieces. But it was awesome. I'm so fortunate to have been able to play the role.
So Megan, I mean, aside from having to shift from, okay, we're going to the stage, from the stage to the radio, what things did you encounter or like did you not expect as you were kind of going through the process of creating this play for the radio?
I guess I didn't expect that I was going to have to write so many different drafts. And I mean, not just drafts, but entirely different plays with different characters. And it just ended up that the one that had to be radio play, like we had to do this format because of the pandemic, but it also just worked out for the story too, because it's so hard to create a crowd of thousands on a stage with just a few actors. And so the one good part about doing all of this remotely, I wanted to really take advantage of, and I wanted to use those sound effects and really create a scene with sound. If that's the only tool that I have to work with, well, then I'm going to use it to the best of my ability. And that's actually not to the best of my ability, but to the best of our technical director ability, Rael. He is extremely talented, and he is going to really give that day life, because you're going to hear the crowd, you're going to hear the trolley, you're going to hear and feel like you're there on the bridge.
So cool. We all look forward to listening to your play. Today, my guests have been playwright Megan O'Toole Pitts and actress Celia Aguilar. And we can listen to No Mas pretty much anywhere where you can digest a podcast, or on her website at nomasep.com. And we can all take in the story of Carmelita Torres and the 1917 Bath Riots. Thank you so much, Celia and Megan, for being my guests today. And break a leg.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.